I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com with another interview for the All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. My guest today is Dr. Joseph Pierce, who is the author of numerous books, including C.S. Lewis and the Catholic Church, that came out 10 years ago. But today I will be speaking with him about a book just released at the end of 2012, dealing with one of Lewis's friends. The title of Joseph Pierce's book is Bilbo's Journey, Discovering the Hidden Meaning of the Hobbit. I guess our audience can tell who that friend is. Well, welcome to the show, Joseph.
Well, it's good to be here.
Well, this is your first time on the show, so let's begin by having you take a couple of minutes to give us background about what you currently do.
Okay, my name is Joseph Pierce. I'm a writer in residence and visiting fellow at Thomas More College of Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Prior to that, I was on the faculty of Ave Maria University in Florida. I'm the author of, I think, 18 books at the last count, mostly biographies of Christian literary figures. So I've written books on Christian writers such as C.S. Lewis, as you mentioned. I've written a book already on Tolkien prior to the one we'll be discussing today, and also books on Alexander Solzhenitsyn, G.K. Chesterton.
And I understand you're also into Shakespeare.
Yes, thank you for reminding me about that. Yes, I wrote a book called The Quest for Shakespeare, which looks at the evidence for Shakespeare's Catholicism, and I also wrote a book called Through Shakespeare's Eyes, which looks at the Christian dimension of three of Shakespeare's plays. And in a couple of months, I've got a new book coming out called Shakespeare on Love that looks at, again, the Christian understanding, the Christian meaning of the play Romeo and Juliet. So, yes, I'm ongoing love affair with William Shakespeare, absolutely.
Well, before jumping into Bilbo's Journey, would you describe how long you've been interested in the works of J.R. Tolkien and in general, and why you've enjoyed them?
Well, I first read The Lord of the Rings not as a child. Many people read The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit as a child. I didn't discover Tolkien until I was in my mid-20s, but I think it would be fair to say that he then became a major influence on my own conversion to Christianity. I'm a convert from a sort of an agnostic, anti-Christian background. And certainly J.R.R. Tolkien, along with C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton, were major influences on my path to conversion. So, you know, there's a debt of gratitude here. But one thing that I found very, very, shall we say, striking is how few people know how Christian Tolkien's work, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, are. So my book, Tolkien, Man and Myth, published about 10 years ago, looked at Tolkien's Christianity and also at the Christianity of The Lord of the Rings. But the new book, Bilbo's Journey, looks specifically at the Christian dimension of The Hobbit.
Now, the series of movies about The Hobbit obviously had something to do with the release of your book, but could you summarize the process of deciding to write this book and what went into creating it?
Well, you're completely correct, of course. Publishers have an eye to being able to market their books, and so the timing of the release of the book to coincide with the release of the first of Peter Jackson's movies on The Hobbit was deliberate on part of the publisher. Now, for my part, I've been wanting to write a book on the Christian dimension of the Hobbit for some time, and so the fact that the Peter Jackson movies were coming out allowed me to interest a publisher in giving me a contract to write that book. So, you know, I think that the book needs to be read because we do need to know exactly how profoundly Christian The Hobbit is, particularly as it's now being watched by millions of people. It was the highest grossing film in its opening weekend ever in the United States. So it's a huge film. So the more people that we can get to understand the Christian dimension, the greater we can see this as an evangelizing opportunity for Christianity. So you know, many people will not be interested if you just try to preach the gospel to them. But if you start talking about The Hobbit and they love the movies or they love the books or both, you can then talk about how Bilbo exemplifies the Christian life. And that way, you get people interested in listening to the Christian message that otherwise they wouldn't be.
Right. It gets the conversation started, so to speak. It's a tool that can be used.
Yeah, exactly. As C.S. Lewis said, you know, very famously, that we have to get past those watchful dragons. You know, we live in an anti-Christian age in many ways, and people are on the guard against Christianity and don't want to listen to the Christian message. Well, you know, getting the Christian message through the medium of films and books that people love is a good way of evangelizing in an age that's doing its best to silence the Christian voice.
Now, what do you think are the key aspects of your book called Bilbo's Journey that makes it unique among books about The Hobbit?
Well, first of all, you know, I'd like to say that I know of another couple of put books out on the Hobbit from a Christian dimension by people whom I know and respect. So, you know, I don't think it's a question of one-upmanship. But, you know, I've looked at the other two books, and we're not saying exactly the same thing. We sort of complement each other. The key ingredient in the whole of the story of the Hobbit that I bring out is the fact that Bilbo Baggins is very much an everyman figure. In other words, he could be seen as someone who holds up the mirror to us. Tolkien said in his essay on fairy stories that the value of fairy stories is that they hold up the mirror to man. In other words, they reflect ourselves to us, so we can see ourselves more clearly. And Bilbo Baggins' character, his growth in wisdom and virtue, and his return home as a transformed and changed person who's laid down his life for his friends, who's died in a mystical way and has been reborn, all of these reflect the life of Christ and the life of the Christian as a follower of Christ.
Well, now, you note in your book that many modern critics of The Hobbit fail to grasp many meanings because they don't have the understanding of Tolkien's Christian faith. Comment on that, especially because of your own background, being a former atheist, and why it's important to keep in mind Tolkien's Christian background.
Yeah, I mean, Tolkien said of The Lord of the Rings, and I'm quoting him word for word here, that, quote, "The Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work." But so the point is that the author himself, who clearly and obviously knows more about the work than anybody else, has proclaimed of The Lord of the Rings that it's a profoundly Christian work. That being so, we need to find out in what way is it profoundly Christian. Obviously, there's no mention of the name of Jesus Christ because Middle-earth is set, you know, long before God becomes incarnate. So, consequently, how does that Christian dimension emerge? And what's true of The Lord of the Rings being a fundamentally Christian work is also true of The Hobbit. So discovering the hidden meaning of The Hobbit, which is the subtitle of my book, if you like, seeks to explore more in more depth that great wealth of Christian theology and Christian meaning to be found in the story.
Now, I found your discussion on the dragon sickness interesting in Bilbo's journey. Would you mind first telling us what that means and then some of the ways it plays a part in The Hobbit that you discuss?
Yeah, well, the first thing we need to remember is that Tolkien's a medievalist and a philologist. In other words, he's an academic. He was at Oxford University. And so he understands the meaning of symbols. And in Christian typology, in Christian symbolism, the dragon is always a symbol for the devil. So, for instance, when we see great medieval works of St. Michael the Archangel defeating Satan, know that Satan is often depicted as a dragon or a serpent. Or St. George and the Dragon. Again, you know, it's not about a knight in shining armor killing a dinosaur. It's about a holy man defeating the devil. So that the dragon is a symbol for Satan, first of all. So that the dragon sickness is, if you like, a devil sickness, a demonic possession. And one of the things you get out of The Lord of the Rings is that the thing possessed possesses the possessor. That's a tongueful, but I'll say it again because I want us to understand this. The thing possessed possesses the possessor. So the ring, we become addicted to the ring. It's like becoming addicted to sin. The ring is synonymous with sin. Well, in the Hobbit, the dragon sickness is the same thing, that basically the Smaug the dragon is addicted to his possessions, even though they are of no use to him whatsoever. But the dragon sickness does not just affect the dragon, Smaug. It also affects Bilbo at the beginning of the journey when he just wants to stay at home with his creature comforts. He's not prepared to lay down his life for his friends or to take up his cross because he's surrounded by the comfortable things of life and that's all he wants. So there's a wake-up call. The unexpected party at the beginning of the book at Gandalf's instigation is a wake-up call for Bilbo to grow in the fullness of the Christian life, to grow in virtue. And Thorin suffers from the dragon sickness, and the master of Lake Town suffers from the dragon sickness. So we see that hobbits, dwarves, and men, as well as dragons, fall prey to this sin. And ultimately, it's the sin of pride, the sin of making ourselves God.
Now, we can't go into all aspects of your book, and we want to encourage, obviously, people to get it. Again, the title is Bilbo's Journey. You include two appendices in the book. Talk some more about, you already mentioned Tolkien's essay on fairy stories.
Yes, basically, I thought at the end of the book, looking at the hidden meaning of The Hobbit itself, it would be good to understand exactly what Tolkien meant by fairy stories or fantasy. Because, you know, we sometimes think that these are just merely escapist and they're a departure from reality. Well, this was not Tolkien's view. Tolkien's view was in fact the contrary, that because we live in a world that's spiritual as well as material, then those spiritual truths of, you know, about wickedness and virtue and evil and in some ways best shown through the telling of stories. And of course, we need to remember that Jesus Christ himself was a great storyteller, and many of his most important lessons he taught in the form of parables. So for Tolkien, the storytelling was a great means of conveying the truth, that fiction was a way of showing truth. And that's very, very important. And if we don't understand that, we won't understand why Tolkien's thought that writing stories was so important as a Christian, and why indeed The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit have been so powerful in bringing people closer to Christ. Because everybody who reads Tolkien's work, whether they know it or not, whether they're an atheist or a believer, are moved closer to a Christian understanding of reality, because that understanding of reality is subsumed in, embedded in, the very fabric of the works themselves.
Now, at the time we're recording this interview, the first part of The Hobbit movie obviously has come out. It's just over a month ago. Overall, can you give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and tell us why you would rate it that way?
Yeah, if you forced me to do one or the other, rather than being able to twitch my thumb in both directions, I would probably be forced to give it a thumbs down. And the main reason is that I think that his depiction of, for instance, Radagast the Brown is absurd and distasteful. Radagast the Brown, a wizard, you know, like Gandalf, in Tolkien's work, in The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, is a Franciscan figure. His relationship with God's creation is similar to the relationship of St. Francis of Assisi to God's creation, his love of God's creatures. Well, you know, in Peter Jackson's version, he comes across as a sort of demented hippie who's, you know, smoking marijuana and eating magic mushrooms and he's being pulled around on a sleigh by demented rabbits that look like Bugs Bunny. I mean, the whole thing, quite frankly, is absurd. And there's a dignity and a gravity and a sanctity to the way that Tolkien deals with Radagast and these issues in his work that are completely wrecked for me. And for me, that spoils the whole film. There were some good things in the film. I thought the depiction of the Shire was very good. I thought the sanctity that seems to emanate from the character of Galadriel was also very good in Rivendell. So there were good things about it, but I think it was spoiled by this rather juvenile adolescent slapstick approach to issues that Tolkien treated spiritually.
Now, we mentioned before that you wrote a book called C.S. Lewis and the Catholic Church. Tell us some about that book.
C.S. Lewis was very, very influential upon my conversion, and I know he's been very, very influential upon the conversion of many people, both to evangelical forms of Christianity and also to Catholicism. I was obviously I was a convert to Catholicism, and Lewis was a major influence. Now, I'm fascinated. Converts tend to be fascinated by other converts. Now, and Lewis is a convert, albeit not a convert to Catholic Church, but to Anglicanism. And so I was fascinated in Lewis as a convert and his path to conversion. And also, people are always asking, you know, to what extent, you know, is Lewis in harmony with a Catholic understanding of reality, or to what extent is he not? And so my book was an effort sort of to grapple with those. It's mostly, however, a great tribute to Lewis, and I make it clear in the preface at the beginning that the book is not meant for anybody who does not love C.S. Lewis. What I was hoping for is that for Catholics that love Lewis would enjoy and learn from the book, and that non-Catholic Christians who loved Lewis would also enjoy and learn from the book. But, you know, those that didn't love Lewis, you know, needn't bother to read it. That was my approach. So it's a work by a C.S. Lewis admirer, a tribute to C.S. Lewis, but trying to grapple with some of the questions about, you know, where does Lewis stand on issues that are dear to Catholics? You know, to what extent is he one with the Church? To what extent does he differ from the Church? So they're the sort of things I grappled with, but all absolutely from a perspective of not just sympathy, but almost veneration. Lewis is one of those five or six writers that I feel I sort of walk on a crystal floor above my head, and to whom I'm greatly indebted for their role in my own conversion.
Speaking some more on Lewis, many people are already aware, as you are, of course, that this is the 50th anniversary, the time of this recording in 2013. This is the 50th anniversary of his death. And so I can't help but ask why you think his writings are still so popular or why his legacy is still lasting.
Well, I remember something very encouraging that Walter Hooper, you know, the friend of Lewis in the last years of Lewis's life, you know, that Lewis believed that that his books would not be read after he died, and that he would basically be forgotten and be a footnote in history, as it were. Whereas, in actual fact, it would be true to say that the C.S. Lewis is now an industry. You can talk about a C.S. Lewis industry. I mean, all of his books are back in print. They're all selling very well. More people are reading C.S. Lewis today than ever read him while he was alive. And this is a phenomenon, and a very, very encouraging one. And the reason, quite simply, is because, first of all, the things that he writes are timeless. They're not a slave to the zeitgeist, a slave to the spirit of the age. No, because as Lewis himself said, fashions are always coming and going, but mostly going. So if you're very up to date in the 1950s, well, you're very out of date now. Well, Lewis was never up to date or out of date, because the things he wrote about are timeless, because they're true. They're touchstones of truth. And he's a great writer. He's a great apologist. He's also a great writer of fiction. He really is one of the giants of the 20th century. And, you know, he remains a giant figure in the 21st century. And I find that very encouraging, because it means that the good things don't pass away. They merely pass from one generation to the next to be our joint inheritance and to benefit all of us.
Now, turning back to things more related to Tolkien, you've done a series of 8 lectures that are available on the Lord of the Rings. Take some moments here to tell us about that and how people can get a copy.
Yes, I mean, I obviously live in a multimedia age, and I'm a writer, and I see my main vocation is someone who writes books and articles. But I also am an executive director of Catholic Courses, and people want to check that out. It's catholiccourses.com. And we have courses. The format is always 8 half-hour courses by some of the great professors around today on issues such as theology, philosophy, history, the saints, etc. But also we have literature titles, and I've done actually 2 courses on Tolkien. I've done the Lord of the Rings course that you mentioned, but also recently released, I've also done an 8 lecture course on The Hobbit. So, you know, those people perhaps that are not particularly into reading books would rather watch something, the Catholic courses are available either, you know, as DVD or CD, so for listening in the car or watching on the TV or the computer or what have you. I would also mention, by the way, what we're talking about, The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, that I've also done some TV specials for EWTN on The Lord of the Rings. I've done one, I'm filming another, and I'm going back there in April to do a special, an hour-long special on The Hobbit. So, again, there are ways of discovering the Christian dimension of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit without necessarily buying books, although obviously I hope that people will think about going out and buying my book.
Well, speaking of the book, final question, going back to Bilbo's Journey, again, that is the title for those who haven't yet caught that. Do you have any closing thoughts to share about it?
Well, only that, you know, in this day and age where there seems to be a war on Christianity and we live in an age of relativism, it's sometimes difficult to try to engage our culture on the level of theology, because people just turned their back on the gospel, on the level of philosophy, because relativists just talk about opinion rather than truth. But what you find is the great works of beauty can convey the truth in a way that that still gets past those watchful dragons. So a beautiful work of literature, such as The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, are read by people of all persuasions, believers and non-believers. And by looking at the meaning, the Christian meaning that's if you like, underpinning and is subsumed within those works, we can get that Christian message to people that otherwise would have their eyes closed and their ears shut to it. So, no, the evangelizing power of beauty is a major way of evangelizing the culture in which we live. So, in that sense, the great works of Tolkien and C.S. Lewis are of enormous value. And my own work in writing about this Christian literature and writing about Christian writers is part of that evangelization through the power of beauty.
Again, we've been talking with Dr. Joseph Pierce. He is the author of several books. The one we've been focusing on is Bilbo's Journey, Discovering the Hidden Meaning of The Hobbit. Thanks, Dr. Pierce, for joining me on this edition of All About Jack.
My pleasure.
Also, thanks goes to you, the listener, for joining me for my All About Jack podcast, which is a feature of my EssentialCSLewis.com website. All About Jack is also part of the Theology Mix podcast network. I'm William O'Flaherty, and the interview you just heard was recorded back in early 2013, but not shared where I now have my audio files hosted, so it's essentially been unavailable until now. Be sure to check the show notes for a direct link to purchasing Bilbo's Journey by Dr. Joseph Pierce. I also have links to learn more about the videos he mentioned, as well as his book on C.S. Lewis. The show notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The Podbean location is where the podcast is most easily found and navigated. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The other location, EssentialCSLewis.com, highlights the most recent shows on the main page and also has space dedicated to listing past shows and the notes for them. Additionally, you can find a variety of other material on Lewis there, including a popular series that explores quotations attributed to him that may not be from him. Again, be sure to stop by my site to listen to other interviews and special podcasts on a variety of topics, mostly directly related to Lewis. In 2016, I shared an interview I did with Walter Hooper from when I made my first trip to England, and I've uploaded several videos of speakers from the Inklings Week in Oxford from the summer of 2016. In addition to those shows, I also occasionally post previously released episodes on my iTunes feed that can also be found at the Podbean address. If you don't know how to find the show on iTunes, then be sure to check the show notes for a direct link. Again, those notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. If you do visit me on iTunes, please consider rating my podcast, as this can help others find it there. Finally, let me mention, or in case you didn't know, I have a book called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. It's available online at Amazon. Paperback is $14.99, and at last check, the Kindle version was just $5.49. Buying the book is a great way to help support my podcast. You can learn more about this book by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of the book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Thanks again for listening to All About Jack. I'm William O'Flaherty. Thank you.